Welcome to the Strong John Fitness Podcast. This show is dedicated to helping you achieve your best body without the BS. We'll cover training, nutrition, basically everything you need for a successful fitness journey, and we'll have some fun along the way. I'm your host, John Vlahoyanakos. Let's get into it. All right. Awesome. Welcome back to the podcast. We have a special guest. I feel like I haven't had a guest on in a few weeks, but this one's been a few weeks in the making, some scheduling conflicts, some things going on, but I finally got him on. Mr. Jason Leenarts, if you're unaware of who this is, owner and head trainer of Revolution Fitness and Therapy. He's the host of the Revolutionary You podcast, and he's the author of two books, A Revolution a Day and The Revolution is You. He's also an MNU certified nutritionist. There's a lot of things to talk about today. Jason, thanks so much for taking the time, man.
John, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate, as always, your flexibility and the scheduling trying to make this happen. And, you know, it's going to be a privilege to share the time with you. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And we were talking a little bit off air about our last names and then the similarities and differences that we have. But today, I think I really want to start off with what led you to opening a gym. I think is kind of, I'm always kind of interested. You know, we live in a very much sort of online coaching world right now, where it's at its most popular it's ever been, but you are someone who routinely shares, you know, clients and people crushing it in the gym. So could you take me through kind of like your journey, I guess, into why you wanted to open a gym, how it became what it is today?
Yeah, I'll start with a Reader's Digest like bullet point story, and then whatever you want to dive into, you can. So maybe the quick and dirty is this. I actually thought that I wanted to conquer the world with a guitar and a microphone, and my lifestyle was more expensive than what that life was going to allow me to live. And so, you know, as a lot of musicians can attest to, it's kind of hard living on ramen noodles and all that stuff all the time. And so even something as simple as wanting to have nice clothes, it was kind of hard to do that and be gigging out, playing original music around the area. And as a way to sort of back that, I got involved working in retail. So, you know, I went from retail to retail management, and I was in that industry for about 16 years. My degree is actually in business management, so it's not in exercise phys or anything like that. And I was a drug addict for about 10 years from the age of 20 until the age of 30. And when I got clean, I was into fitness, but into it in a sort of a relative sense. I have always been a small framed guy. And fitness was an outlet for me while I was doing drugs, because I knew that I wanted to improve my body. And I was still too far gone with the drugs to realize that if you really want to do what's right for your body, you're going to knock the drugs off. And so it started to turn into, I would be at a gym, and because I'm a small frame guy, people would ask me what I'm doing to look the way that I look. And it's like, oh, do X, Y, Z, not knowing one damn thing about what I was telling them. And so along the way, I got a part-time job at a gym, and it was basically just because I wanted to be able to be, you know, work somewhere for free or work out somewhere for free. And I hated the manipulation behind selling gym memberships back then. And this was for a box gym. And I found that I was still giving fitness advice anyway. So I went to the head trainer and I said, okay, if I want to get certified, what do I need to do? And he gave me a list of organizations to try. And so my first certification that I got was in 2007 with ISSA. And I realized very early on that if I wanted to transform bodies, in my mind, it was going to happen more through nutrition than through exercise. But obviously, as you well know, it takes both. And so I started to put more of my focus on, okay, I think I want to learn more about food and maybe not quite as much about, you know, exercise programming and things like that, because I had no desire to go work for a sports team or anything like that. I wanted to serve the general population. And so I had some really interesting things happen in my family that allowed me to be in a financial position to open a business of my own. So when I was finished with school and my degree and going through some major life changes, I said, okay, I'm going to take this certification. I'm going to open up a business of my own. And that was, as we speak, nearly 13 years ago. So we're just coming up on the heels of our 13 year anniversary, which is an amazing thing to say, not just with small businesses, but small businesses on the heels of COVID. It's been an incredible journey. And I'll stop it there and let you dive into anything that you find interesting.
That was amazing. That whole story is interesting. I mean, the fact that we get to chat about this and you don't have if I've had, I think maybe a dozen coaches on this podcast, like most of them knew what they wanted to do out of high school, out of college. They're like, yeah, I want to get into fitness. You, I mean, our stories are a little bit similar where I had no idea what I was doing, but yours is very much even more unique where you were making music. You were completely in a different kind of world entirely that, you know, music and fitness don't often cross paths. Right. But the fact that you found that, that outlet in fitness and you realized that, hey, like I need to make a full blown change in order to change myself, but also help others, which I think, again, every coach I talk to, it comes down to wanting to help others. I think that's the biggest thing, but your journey into this industry is completely different from anyone I've talked to, which is kind of nice to know that I'm not the only one who's kind of like late to this. Cause I didn't want to do this when I was 18 years old. Right. How did you find it? Like when you're battling, like you said, you're working out while you're, you know, still on drugs, how did you find it? Like trying to help people, but battling that kind of like still trying to help yourself and kind of almost in a limbo in that.
Sure. So I'm 46 right now, and I was 20 years old when I started drugs. And by about the age of 23, 24 is when I started lifting weights for the first time. And it was all self-motivated. It was just, I'd been on a cocktail of drugs one evening and made the mistake of looking in the mirror when I was on, as part of that cocktail, I was on some hallucinogens. And if anyone's listening to this that knows what I'm talking about, that's not really a good time to look in the mirror because everything is pretty nice and distorted, but it was enough to kind of, you know, kind of scare me straight and go, I need to do something about this. So I started very simply. I bought a weight bench and I bought a couple of dumbbells and I was in my apartment by myself with some muscle magazines, just trying to do something. And, you know, as many people that went through lockdowns can attest to, if you don't have a lot of toys to play with, you hit a ceiling fairly fast. And so, you know, then I got into a box gym and got a gym membership. And hell, I could even say this now, but certainly back then I was the smallest adult male in that gym. I would probably still be the smallest adult male in that gym, but I weigh more now than I did then. And I certainly have more muscle mass than I did then. But it was one of those things where as I was kind of running through my tenure with retail management, for anyone who's ever worked in retail, it is a brutal industry. It's a lot of hours. It's a lot to ask of the human body. Not that, you know, being a personal trainer in a brick and mortar business isn't hard on the body, but it's one of those things where it's like, am I ever going to make it out of here? Like how far can I actually go? And when I started working in that gym, as I mentioned, you know, you start giving fitness advice and, you know, by this point I'm already clean and I'm already trying to turn my own life around. And I remember, and this is actually a story that I still tell to this day that I hope I never forget it, but there was a gentleman that came into the gym one day and he signed up for a membership and he was an overweight gentleman. He looked like he had been crying and he came to the front desk and he said, I need to get a personal trainer. My doctor has told me that if I don't get my weight under control, that I'm going to lose one of my limbs to diabetes and I need to do something about that. And so we started training with one of the trainers that were there at that time. I had not been certified yet. And I think he probably went full bore for about 2 weeks and then we never saw him again. And I kind of sat there and that was a pretty profound thing for me to see because I thought, you know, I know this now that you can't force people to change. And I know what it's like being a recovering drug addict, that it's like, you know, nobody begged me to change. Interventions were not going to work for me. I went to rehab. I did AA. I did NA. I did all those things. And if you're not ready, you're not ready. And I just thought, you know, I know what it's like to be the person in the gym where you feel embarrassed to be seen. And granted, it's from being on one end of a given spectrum. You know, you have people that, you know, clients, they don't want to go to a gym because they're like, well, I'm the heaviest I've ever been. And I don't want people to look at me. Well, I was a really, really thin bastard and I didn't want people to look at me either. So I know those feelings. And so it was one of those things where it's like, okay, if I want to be of best service to people, I want it to be, you know, as inclusive as possible. I want people to feel like they can come to a place that is comfortable for them, where no one's going to look down on them, where we have a good time and lift weights and do strong things. And it helped me, I think, in a way that I was a bit older. So, you know, when I started this business, I was 33 years old. So I wasn't a spring chicken. And And I tried my best to talk to people where they were at. I didn't, you know, look down my nose at them and treat them like they were inferior people because, you know, I had my food in check and maybe they didn't, or, you know, whatever. It was just, I really wanted to help as many folks as I can, which I know a lot of coaches can relate to. And fortunately for me, while I was starting this business, while I was trying to like buy all the equipment and find the location, the first person I got to help was my dad. And if you follow my story or, you know, keep in tune with the things that I write, I lost my dad to cancer shortly after I opened this business. It's been to this day, one of the most traumatizing events of my life because he was my hero. But I keep him in the back of my mind too, that like, okay, be the closest thing to the man that your father raised you to be and really make a go of this business. And to whatever degree you want to believe in heaven or not, I think that my dad earned his spot up there. And I hope he's looking down and saying, you did okay. You know, I think it's probably more than okay because this business is rocking, but it's been a really cool thing to be a part of. So I know it's a very long-winded answer.
That's amazing. No, man. Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that. And I think you've touched on quite a few key points, and I think it's true. I think, you know, I write content, you write content, you know, we're out here to help people, but at the end of the day, if someone doesn't feel like they're ready to make the change, unfortunately, the change isn't going to happen for them. And, you know, we can only do or say so much. And I don't know any of your experiences, if you've ever had to like try to convince someone to make a change or change a habit, like it's tough. And for other coaches out there, you know, sometimes it feels like pulling teeth, and, you know, that's the job. Sometimes habit change is hard. We have to take someone from, you know, maybe it's 10 years of a learned behavior, and we have to help them kind of undo that and reprogram them into something new. It's not something that happens overnight. And Jason, you can attest to this because your change happened over the span of years, and you can tell me more. And my guess is that's why the word revolution is kind of everywhere surrounding you. And I think I'd love for you to explain more as to why, because revolution, I think you mean different things to different people. I hear the word transformation when I hear your story, but I also know why the word transformation might not be, you know, where you're at in terms of using that word. But I'd love to know why Revolution Fitness and Therapy, why a revolutionary you, why, what is it about that word that does it for you?
Yeah. So there's two parts to it. At the time that I started this business, I just had a complete love affair with the Beatles. I think I've always had a love affair with the Beatles, especially when I was playing music, because it was music that, you know, whether you love them or you hate them, they're one of the catchiest bands of all time. And as I've gotten older, I've probably distanced myself a little bit more from their material, but it's one of those things where I grew up with that music. And as a, you know, when I was playing in bands, it was something that like, if I needed to like inspire myself again with writing songs, I would kind of go back to Beatles stuff and just go, you know, even if my finished product doesn't sound anything like a Beatles song, you kind of go back to some of those just core elements of what should some of the chord structures be. And so when I started the business, I just thought Revolution Fitness, because I wanted the name of a Beatles song in the name of my business. And there was already a Revolution Fitness in the state of Ohio. And so I couldn't take that name. And I had just finished a certification with ISSA called Fitness Therapy. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just do that. Maybe it'll be Revolution Fitness and Therapy. And one of the sort of unintended effects of using the term revolution was, if you look in the dictionary, one of the definitions of that word is a sudden and dramatic change. And while you know just as well as I do from all the time that you spent coaching, sometimes it's not quite like that. Sometimes it is a slow, gradual change. I like the feeling of a hard shift. And as I think a lot of addicts can attest to, sometimes that's what you have to do. It's a rip the Band-Aid off, cold turkey approach to, this is something that I have to stop. And so it was something that I felt just sort of resonated with the vision of the business is, you know, that there are going to have to be things in your life, as you say, if there are patterns that you've learned, whether you have a trauma-informed past, whether you've gone through the things that I've gone through, whatever, there are certain points in your life where you're like, you know what, fuck this, I can't take anymore. and I'm going to stop whatever this thing is. And that thing is either going to be a toxic relationship, or it's going to be a, you know, a failing marriage, or it's going to be the job that's sucking life out of you, or it's going to be, I can't be at this weight anymore. And whatever it is, find a fantastic coach and go, I need your help, and embrace that person and be along for the ride and just go, I need you with me. And I'll even step back and put my, you know, myself in the hot seat with this. You know, you're a business owner. What's one of the first things you get when you start a business? You get a damn accountant, because you're like, you know what? There's going to be an aspect of this job that I need a professional to help me with. And I'm not ever, ever, ever going to want to do my own taxes. So I will pay someone that monthly fee to just be, listen, I need you by my side so that when it comes tax season, I'm already covered. And this is no different than it is for personal training. And granted, you know, some people are certainly self-starters. They can spend a couple months with a trainer, get what they need to. They have the tools to move on. And John, you just did a post about this recently about you love when people graduate from your program. That's fantastic. And I think responsible coaches know it's our goal to give the tools to the client. Now, I love in a perfect world that a client stays with me indefinitely, because it means that the relationship is healthy. It means that the community is healthy. It means that what they get out of, I'm going to go to RevFit 2 to 3 days a week and show up and see my people and do the things. That's a wonderful thing. But it's also wonderful when a client comes to you and says, you know what, this has been great, and I think I can do this on my own. You know what, Godspeed. And my doors are open. When and if you're ready, you know where to find me, and I'll be here with open arms if you decide that you want to come back. There's ways for everyone to like live happy with these options.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's a couple things. The account thing is funny, because the analogy I always use is mechanic. I will never, and this might be the most unmanly thing I ever say, but I will never try to fix my own car. Like, that is not something I want to do. I want to learn how to do.
Right. Same here.
If I have an issue, I'm sending it off to the professionals. And when it comes to like with coaching clients and building that relationship, whether in person or online, the biggest thing I always let everyone know from the first call we have is like, I don't want to be your coach forever. If you love the coaching and want to stick around, totally fine. But it's literally my job to give you the tools to do this for yourself. And I always preface that, because the fitness industry gets a bad rap a lot of the times. I was going to say sometimes, but a lot of the times there are terrible products, terrible coaches, just terrible things happening overall. So I want to make it known that I'm anti that. Like, I am not the guy to string you along and only give you tidbits of information. I know, Jason, you're the same way. You're not here to, you know, hold on to people as long as you can, because, you know, where would your business go without them? It's more of an abundance thing. As you know, you have the skills to help a great amount of people, but you also know that you don't have to hold on to every single person and string them along to help them. You want to be like, you know what, you're good, awesome, that makes me happy, that makes you happy. This is what we're here for as coaches, right? We're not in it to make the most amount of money possible. We're in it to help as many people as possible, you know, while building our businesses and our lives. But I think you touched on is like, you want to build that community, the trust, the relationship with someone. And I think that only comes through honesty. And you're a very honest person. You're very open on social media with your writing as well, with your books, with your podcast, just, you know, and I think people can really appreciate that, because again, there is a lot of fluff. There is a lot of fake. There's a lot of inauthentic and fake vulnerability out there. So when people can feel that, like, Jason, like, he's a real person and he's faced real problems, but I also know that he can help me with my problems. To me, that's kind of like the best quote unquote marketing you can have. What do you think?
I mean, I agree, because it's the philosophy that I follow. And, you know, and I'll be very candid about the fact that there are things that I write about, and for those that are listening that don't follow, you know, my work, there, I probably don't share as much of my story, for instance, on my podcast. It's more for my guests to be able to shine. I share more of my, you know, my personal stuff on my blog, and I'm pretty open. And part of that is because I need people to see the human element to what I go through, to what my family has gone through, to the things that I struggle with, to the things that my clients struggle with. I realize that because of the transparency of the things that I write with, that I'm going to turn some people off. And I've accepted that as a consequence of what I do, because I won't ever say that I am for all people. But I am for some people, and for those people, it's like, you know, we are in this together. And so it's, I'll give this as an example. So as I've mentioned a few times, I've been clean from drugs since 2006. What I do partake in is alcohol, and my wife and I are both big bourbon drinkers. And this is something that, as our marriage has evolved and we've gone through the peaks and valleys of being married and being in a long-term relationship and all that stuff, bourbon was something that we actually connected or reconnected over. And so it's become sort of a reinvention of our own love story. And we don't get drunk, and you're not going to see us out at the bars, closing the places up. That's not what we do. We have a pour of bourbon with dinner every night. And if you go on my Instagram, you will see quite frequently that I'm posting the dinner that we have with what we're eating, and then featured whatever that bourbon or rye is of the evening. And very intentionally, those are measured 2-ounce pours. And so I had a client that had been referred to me from a longstanding client. And they said, you know, we think that you really love working with Jason. And this client came in, and this wasn't the first time that this had happened. I normally do attract people in recovery. And this woman had said, I'm sober, and I've been sober for a couple of years. And normally when I add new clients into our community, I'll tell them, hey, listen, my wife and I are bourbon drinkers, and I'll be posting pictures of it. Is that something that's going to be triggering for you? Because I just want to be, I don't want to be offensive about it. You know what I mean? And I know what it was like when I first got clean. I look down my nose at anybody who did drugs, because I'm like, oh, I'm better than you because I got clean and you didn't. And it took me a while to sort of come around to, this isn't, you know, I'm not better than anybody. So I failed to have this conversation with this client, and we set up a time for her to get started, and I added her into the community. And a couple of days later, she sent me a message, and she said, I'm going to need to cancel our first session. I've got some things going on. I need to kind of talk to my therapist about some things. And if I could just call you back a little bit later in the day. And I said, yeah, no problem. Hope everything's okay. And she called me that day, and she said, I'm really struggling with something. And I said, okay. And she said, I know that I told you in our consultation that I am sober, and I find it a little bit off-putting that someone in your relation, you know, in your position would post so much with alcohol. And I kind of sat back a little bit, and I thought, okay, don't have a knee-jerk reaction here, you know? And I said, oh, I'm so, so sorry. I said, you know, I don't know if we got into this conversation, but I'm in recovery from drugs. And I very much am sensitive to the fact that everybody kind of has to kind of go through their path. I try not to be obnoxious about it or anything like that, but I completely understand that this is something that is just not going to work for you. And I'm so sorry if I, you know, if this is a triggering situation. And everything was very civil, and because, you know, why shouldn't it be? But, you know, that's where sometimes transparency can actually, you know, you can leave money on the table. And so I just told her, I said, should things change in the future, I would love the opportunity to work with you. And that's the best you can do. So, you know, yeah, I think it's good to be transparent. But, you know, if you're going to do that, just realize that not everyone is going to find you to be their cup of tea, and that's okay. You got to be able to look in the mirror and be okay with that too. So
100%. That's an amazing story. Yeah. Did she ever come back?
No. And actually this actually wasn't terribly long ago. This is probably only about 7 or 8 months ago, maybe. Mm. So it's fairly fresh.
Okay.
And of course I haven't changed the fact that we post, you know, our dinner with the bourbon. So if she's keeping an eye on, you know, the way that I market the business and market what we eat as part of a sort of an all-encompassing philosophy that, hey, if you partake, it's okay to have alcohol, assuming that you can moderate it, knowing full well that some people can't, and that's okay. Just like, I'm very open about the fact that I don't moderate cookies. That's why I don't keep cookies in the house.
Hey, that's
so,
it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. What is it? I have to ask, because you're not the only fitness professional business owner that's talked about this. What is it about bourbon? Am I missing something? Because that's something I've never really been big on.
So yeah. So this is an interesting story. So my wife and I have been together for a little over 12 years. And when we started dating, she was a performer at Disney, and I was trying to kick this business off in Ohio. And so we only saw each other once a month for about the first 16 months of our relationship. And normally it would be like a very quick weekend, like 3 or 4 days down in Florida, or she would be 3 or 4 days up here. And, you know, we would have beer, we would have wine or do whatever. And when my dad got sick and had been diagnosed with cancer, my life just kind of took a turn. And I just got to the point where I just didn't enjoy alcohol. I didn't enjoy the taste of it. It just kind of upset my stomach, and I just didn't want to do it anymore. So probably about a year into my relationship with my wife, I just said, you know what, I'm done. And so I sobered up for 4 years, and my wife would have, you know, routinely her wine or her beer or whatnot. And, when we got married, our honeymoon was in Paris. And as part of our, you know, honeymoon package, we were given a bottle of French champagne. And my wife kind of made the comment. She was like, I guess I'm going to be enjoying this by myself. And I was like, well, you know, when in Rome, right? Yeah. And so we had the French champagne. It was wonderful. And then I think we had champagne every night of our honeymoon. And it was great. When I got back to America, when we got back to America, I was having a really difficult time stomaching. Is that a word?
Yeah, we'll take it.
beer or wine. Beer just made me feel bloated. Wine made me tired. And I thought, well, if I'm going to drink something, maybe I should try liquor. And so I started, you know, with just some regular run-of-the-mill stuff, your Gentleman Jack and your Woodford Reserve, some of the lower proof options that you can buy basically anywhere. And along the way, I'm trying to experiment with a couple of different brands. And my wife's name is Marissa. Marissa just wasn't really into it. She's like, oh, that stuff just burns, you know? And one of my clients found out that I liked bourbon and said, have you ever heard of Blanton's? And for those who are tuning in who know anything about bourbon, they're probably going to be chuckling when they hear this. But I said, no, I've never heard of it. And he had asked for a favor, and I was able to help him with that favor. And as a thank you, he gave me a bottle of Blanton's, which is it's not an easy bourbon to find for those who know much about it. It's a fairly low proof bourbon. But then I started just trying to like learn more. Okay, let me understand some of the history behind this drink and all this other stuff. And along the way, my wife is like, okay, well, if you're going to have some, you know, you're drinking it neat, I think I need something to sort of take the edge off. So I started making her Manhattans. And this was around the time shortly after our son Sebastian was born. So my wife was trying to lose some of the baby weight. And we have a running joke that switching from wine and beer to bourbon is what helped my wife lose weight. And it's actually true, because she cut her caloric consumption from alcohol nearly in half, if not more, because she literally couldn't drink as much bourbon as she could wine or beer or whatnot. And so, you know, we've sort of chuckled about that, but it was a very slow sort of segue. And then of course, as you get more into it, you can work up your palate towards higher proof options. And so, you know, it's not uncommon for she and I to have, you know, a pour of something that's say 120 proof or something like that. That'll just, you know, the average person, if they took a sip of it, it would just turn their head sideways. But again, you're not going to be consuming a whole lot of that proof.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just a slow thing, but to that point, it sits very well on my stomach. It doesn't upset my stomach. And I don't ever feel the need to go overboard with it. So
you found a balance with it, and it helped connect deeper with your wife, which I think is kind of an underrated aspect of it all too. It's not just about like the alcohol. It's the connection and relationship with your wife that helped.
Well, yeah, and it, you know, for a couple who, you know, when you think of the term opposite attract, my wife and I would probably fit that bill. We are opposites in a lot of ways. And so for us to actually have something like this to kind of bond over, where it's like, okay, I'll get home after work tonight, we'll have dinner, I'll have a pour for us, and you know, we will eat our dinner, and then we'll just sit there and we'll take our little Glencairn glasses and we'll start to nose the bourbon and go, you know, what do you smell? Well, I smell notes of this. Okay, cool. You know, and we've done the bourbon trail a few different times and it's pretty great. And I'm sure we'll be doing more, you know, jaunts down there and all that stuff, because it's just, it's now become part of, like I said, almost like this evolution of our marriage, where it's like, oh, this is just kind of that thing that we do. So yeah, it's neat. And there for a while, our son would go into the dining room where all the bourbon is at, and he was like, that's Maker's Mark and that's
Yeah.
Woodinville. And it's like, you don't need to go to school knowing the names of these bourbons.
That's amazing.
So, but yeah,
Yeah,
it's funny.
how old is Sebastian?
Sebastian will be 5 this year in August.
Okay, there
So
you go. See ya.
he is the boy that I have with Marissa. And then I have Jackson, my oldest from my first marriage, and Jackson is 14. So yeah, those are my guys.
That's amazing. It's funny. My 5-year-old will notice, like, if I have a Monster can or different beer cans, he just automatically assumes all the tall cans are beer. That's beer. That's beer. So we haven't taught him all the names yet. And I think we're gonna wait a
Oh,
little bit
sure.
for that.
I
Yeah.
mean, they look so similar, right?
Yeah. But no, it's interesting. I'm
Yep,
glad.
yep.
Just to shift gears a little bit, from one father to another. How do you balance it all? And I know that's a really loaded question. It's really not an easy question to answer, but between running a gym and a business, being a father, you know, getting your own fitness work done, writing the way you do, podcasting, how does it all fit in a day or a week? I guess it wouldn't really all fit in a day.
Sure. So I know that I've spoken about this before on other podcasts and probably even on my own, but there's no other way to tell it. What I'm going to do slightly differently when I tell this story this time is do something that I probably haven't done before, which is I'm going to start with actually crediting my wife for helping me with that. Because as you know, when you're in a marriage, it takes two. And so it's one of those things where this is the only thing Marissa has ever seen me do is this job. And the hours have always been crazy. And so on that note of the hours, let me give you a snapshot of what my day looks like. Monday through Friday, I wake up at 3:45 in the morning. I have time to get some coffee, check emails, read for just a little bit, and then I need to get freshened up to get ready for work, because work is about 20 minutes away. We start seeing clients at about 5:15 in the morning. We go from about 5:15 until about 10 every day, and then I shut down operations for about 4.5 hours, and that's when I get my own training in. That's when I get in lunch. That's when I run errands. That's when I do the podcast. That's when I am doing client consultations and checking in on my online clients. And then we fire things back up at the studio at about 2:30. We go until about 5:30 most nights. I drive 20, 25 minutes to get back home. We have dinner. We have our bourbon. We wind down. And John, I am probably eyes closed by 8:30 at night.
Wow.
And I rinse and repeat that every single day. Saturdays, I do wake up at the same time, but that's more just for consistency's sake, because I find the more I can keep that wake time consistent, the better it is for me. We don't train quite as long on Saturdays. We just train from about 7 to 9. And then the rest of the day is open for the things that I do with my family. And then Sundays is also open, where it's, you know, spending time with my family and things like that. So I'll circle back to it. You know, my wife is very understanding, and she is, you know, at home holding down the fort with the wild child. And it's not always easy. And there's certainly times where I've struggled with actually turning it off when I get home. And it's like, no, you're home now. So to the best of your ability, you need to focus on what's going on in home, not be dicking around on your phone and all that other stuff. So it's, you know, it's a struggle. And sometimes I bring work home with me, but I really try to limit that. But that's kind of how I balance it. And just trying to, you know, trying to make it all happen. So
Yeah.
yeah.
That it makes me feel like I'm not as busy as I think I am based on everything you just described. So thank you for that.
You're good. I know it's all relative. You know, I know people who they try to compact their day into a smaller chunk. And that's perfectly okay. And of course, if you're someone who is in the, you know, primarily in the online world, perhaps you can do that. But that's not my bread and butter. I mean, I do have online clients, but that's, you know, that we're talking, that's not even 10% of my revenue. The majority of my revenue is from face-to-face clientele. So it's one of those things where I've noticed, even when I like go on a little vacation, if I'm not here, clients cancel left and right. And it's like, that's not the goal. The goal is to get you here.
When it comes to, cause something I really struggle with is not taking work home, which I'm always home, but I try to work in levels where like the basement is my work. And then the upstairs living room area and above is family time. Do you have any tips, advice, anything that's worked for you in terms of like shutting the work brain off or transitioning back into home life?
So one of the things that helps me is the fact that I do have about a 20-25 minute commute to get back home. And during that time, especially, you know, when you consider I've basically been away from home for 12 hours every day. That is the time that I have to do my best to essentially decompress and start to let my mind wind down from the workday so that I don't go home and vomit all of it on my wife. And I also have to keep in mind too, that, you know, my wife's social engagement has been around a four-year-old, you know what I mean? She needs adult interaction. And so it's remembering that, okay, you know, when you get in, walk in the kitchen, hug your wife, give her a kiss, like be dialed into that. And you know, if she were on the podcast with me right now, she would be like, yeah, but you were on your phone for like 15 minutes last night. So these things happen. And, you know, to call it what it is, my wife is in musical theater, and she is, as of the recording of this show, she is ramping up rehearsals for the next show that she will be directing and choreographing. So this is the time when she's a little bit more dialed into her phone as well. And that's not a knock. It's just, this is the time when she's got cast members that are texting her left and right and going, what about this? And what about that? And I'm sick and all this other stuff. And it's like, she, you know, she has to attend to those things. So it's, you know, like a lot of things. And I mean, we can make a perfect parallel with weight loss. It's never perfect. It's never, ever, ever perfect. But you can start to make strides in the right direction. And, you know, as I would imagine you do for your clients, you know, how many times do we talk about values? Well, how do your actions, how does your diet, how is it reflected in your values? And if your values are, I want my wife to be attuned to me when I get home, you probably don't need to have your nose in your phone. And if you wonder why, and I'm going to be really crude when I say this, if you wonder why there's not a lot of chemistry when you have sex, how much time are you spending on your phone when you should be engaging with one another? Mm. You know, that's where the chemistry is at. So it's about making sure that you've got that time to basically share with one another to go, okay, I know you don't want to hear about gym life. Tell me about your day, you know? And so that's our time to kind of reconnect on, you know, what happened with Sebastian this morning, what's going on with you, tell me about what's going on with the show, things like that, to where I cannot think about RevFit for a couple of hours, because I know that once I go to sleep and I wake back up, it is RevFit baby for the next 12.
Fair enough. Yeah,
so
that's true.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah. And I think one of the biggest focal points, I think, of, I guess I'll say myself or my relationship with my wife this year has been dating my wife again. And I think that's a very underrated thing that more couples should be doing. I know babysitting is tough sometimes, or if you don't have access to them, it doesn't always have to be a grand thing, but like we went to the movies a week or two ago. It was awesome because we used to go to movies all the time when we were dating kids and all that stuff. And it's just, I think parents forget that the one-on-one time by themselves is necessary for their relationship. So they're not just parents all the time. They can be husband and wife or spouses, couple, whatever it is. And I think that might be a missing link for a lot of people, because if you don't have much chemistry, but you're always, you know, watching the kids, talking about the kids, watching TV, talking on your phone, you're never really connecting with the other person. And it sounds like with what you and your wife have going on is a lot of give and take here and there. But you do have your connecting points, which I think is very important.
Well, and it's to your point, and I'm in like 1000% agreement with you. It was one of those things. I'm not like a super big New Year's resolution kind of person. I mean, they're fine if that's what you're into, but it was one of those things where somewhat consciously I was like, you know what? 2022 is going to be the year that Marissa and I are going to do something once a month. We're going to get out and we're going to do something that we don't normally do. Whether that's, we're just going to get like a hotel locally and get a babysitter and just like stay at the hotel and feel like we're having a night away from home. And it's, you know, obviously it's early in the year, but that's been huge for us. And, you know, even something as simple as, and this may sound kind of silly to some people, but like, I can tell when my wife is about to lose her nerve. And sometimes it's, you know, I will be in the dining room, we'll have our bourbon, and I'll lean over to the, you know, to the Echo and go, Alexa, play such and such song. And I'll grab her hand and we'll dance in the dining room just for a song, you know, just like, hey, let's forget about whatever's going on right now. We're going to dance. We're not going to talk, and just like kind of forget about what's going on in the rest of the house right now. And, you know, I can't say that this is going to work for everybody, but it does wonders for my marriage. So we know we try to remember to slow dance as often as we can, because it was something that, again, like when we sort of shifted the focus of our marriage, it was one of those things that it was like, this is the new us. Okay. So this is what we do. And sometimes she has to remind me, you haven't danced with me in a while. Fuck, you're right. I'll get right back on that.
The accountability.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, cheers to my wife for keeping me honest.
That's awesome, man. I'd love to hear things like that. When it comes to the fitness side of things, and you can say fitness, nutrition, you talked a lot about balance, all encompassing. You share a ton of the dinners, the bourbons. How does that play into your schedule with like workout times or your wife's workout times? Does she go to Ref Fit to train? Like, how do you work all of that in your schedules?
Yeah. So my wife typically trains here 3 days a week. She typically will do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Historically, she's trained in the morning during our morning block. She'll bring Sebastian with her. And of course, Sebastian at this point is just, he's just kind of a fixture in our gym. So he likes to play with the battle ropes and the inertia wave. And he's trying to lift the kettlebells and all that stuff. And he's pretty tough. So it's cool to see it. But yeah, I mean, she's got her own, you know, workout plan that I put together for her. And so she gets her time in, which is great. And then I recently, and I think I can talk about this. Because I've talked about it on my podcast. I joined forces with Dr. Spencer Nadolski earlier this year, as a sort of a component of his Lift RX program. And he had hired a team of nutrition coaches, which I'm very fortunate to be a part of. And so he hasn't done like the major launch for that nutrition coaching yet. Although we each have clients so far. But as part of that Lift RX, I've actually been following that program. And part of that's because the members of his community, they have questions about it. And so I'm like, well, you know, I don't mind running through it as a coach. And if the coaches who actually designed that program, if they're not able to answer a question, maybe it's a question that I can answer, just to kind of be a part of what, you know, his people are doing. So that's been kind of a nice thing to be a part of this year that started back in January. And so, that's how I get my training in. And of course, just try to keep my steps high, which I already do because of RevFit. So the step count's pretty much always high for me, but making sure that I have dedicated 3 days a week to do strength training, which takes about a half hour of my time. And I also try to get in about a half hour of just dedicated, you know, low intensity, steady state cardio, just for heart health and mind health and all that stuff. So
I love it, man. You're like busy as ever, but you're still prioritizing your fitness, which is key.
Yeah. I mean, I feel, I know this can be like a slippery slope, but I do try to walk the talk. So if I tell my clients, you know, you should try to get in more steps, I should probably try to get in more steps, you know, or actually spend time doing some cardio and things like that. And I always kind of use the argument that it's like, well, I'm already thin. I don't need cardio, but that's not really the point, you know? So for me, and I have to credit Dr. Lisa Lewis for helping me with this mental shift, was she had told me about a book called Spark, where it talked about all of the neurological benefits of doing cardio, just traditional cardio. And I thought, you know, that's kind of the reframing that I needed, is not that I find myself depressed or anxious or short fused or anything like that, but it's like, who doesn't want their brain to work better? So that became really the motivation for me to just actually get in some cardio. And I'm the first person to say, in case anybody's tuning in that, you know, wants to know how to get it done, it is not uncommon for me to do 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes late morning and 10 minutes later on in the afternoon, because sometimes that's the only time that I have to get it done. So it's very rare that I actually like will commit 30 minutes, like do or die, you know, cardio. And I'm not trying to impress anybody with sprint intervals or anything like that, because it's just not my thing. So,
yeah, I mean, you're bringing up an important point, is you're getting it in when you can. It doesn't have to be one big chunk. It can be split up throughout the day. And I think, well, as a quick aside, like when I hurt my back a few years ago, I dove really hard into Stu McGill's stuff, Dr. Stu McGill and low back health. Yeah. And he even said, like, you know, 10 minute walks multiple times a day is very, just because, again, we're all sitting a lot. Well, maybe not you, but we're sitting a lot. So just getting up multiple times a day will just help you mentally, physically, and just stay moving. So for anyone who's still working from home, which I know there's a lot of people out there, you don't have to do big, long walks. And it's not just for like cardio's for weight loss sake. It's literally just to kind of get your body moving, feeling good, getting your brain firing again, stepping away from your work, I think, which is highly underrated, because it's very easy to get just sucked into it for hours on end, which I'm sure you can attest to, Jason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you're right. I mean, I don't hurt for movement, but I needed to sort of reshift my mindset to, well, what is the purpose of this movement? Okay. The purpose of low intensity steady state cardio is to help with what's happening between my ears. And I was like, that's good motivation for me. I'll make sure I get that in. And so that's something I do probably 5 times a week.
So, I love it. That's solid. Yeah. So, because I mean, the theme of this podcast has kind of been in line with your brand is revolution. I love it. If you can just, it doesn't matter how many points it is, whatever you think is what do you think someone needs to do to have their own revolutionary change for themselves?
So the first part I think is probably the hardest. And I'll relate this specific to me, but it's not just about me. You could be the person who's tuning in that has X amount of weight to lose. You do have to determine your own relative rock bottom. That looks very different for everyone. Using drugs as an example for myself, you would think that when I saw people die, when I saw people go to jail, when I saw really terrible things happen to people around me, that would be the rock bottom. But that wasn't the stuff that got me down to my soul. What got me clean was the fact that my life had gotten so far out of whack that I felt the need to be on drugs all day long just to be able to cope with life. And it reached a point where the decisions that I made with money that I spent on drugs were actually starting to affect my parents, directly affect my parents. And I thought, okay, it's one thing for me to be selfish enough to be a drug addict. And I will say that it's selfish. I'll say that for myself. I won't throw a blanket over everyone else. But the fact that my parents had to directly suffer because of my drug choices, that wasn't going to fly. So after 10 years of taking every drug known to man in as many amounts and combinations as I could, I finally just had to go, it needs to stop. And so I stopped. And so wherever you are, wherever you go, okay, this is the point where I just can't take it anymore, that's the first place that you have to get to. It doesn't have to be as dramatic as that. It just has to be your place. Because I don't want anybody else to have to be a drug addict just to be able to change. It's not a good path to go. But determine your bottom and surround yourself with people who can show you how to climb the rungs. And what can be difficult for people is it's easy-ish to hire a coach that you trust and for that coach to be invested in that ride with you. And John, I believe that you're one of those coaches that would take very good care of your clients, as I try to do for mine. It's important to remember that sometimes the people who are closest to you are not the best people to help you change. And that means that even though your spouse may love you as the day is long, they're not going through what you're going through the way you're going through it. So they may not be the best person to help you change. And that goes for your best friends, and it goes for your kids, and it goes for your coworkers. In a perfect world, they would all be the perfect people to help you. But that's not reality. Reality is the people that are closest to you are probably some of the ones that can sabotage your efforts. And it's not because they don't care. It's not because they don't love you. So it's about finding the support system that is as closely aligned to your goals as what you can find. And then, of course, it's the other little things. It's trying to find what you can enjoy about it, realizing that we as coaches like to use the word sustainable a lot. And it's not that it doesn't have weight. It does have weight. But the thing is that dieting in and of itself isn't supposed to be a sustainable practice. It's not. If you do it right, this is my opinion, you get in and you get the fuck out. Because you don't want to go through that process for a long time. Get the work in, get it done, be uncomfortable for that span of time, and then go, what are the tools that I need to maintain? And continue to surround yourself with people who make you feel like you're the best version of yourself. And outside of your coach and outside of that support system, the one thing that I like to lean on a lot is you might need a therapist, and that's okay. Because a therapist may give you coping skills and coping tools to help you be the best version of yourself. You don't necessarily have to have a therapist for the rest of your life. But like in my case, my therapist is somebody that I can go to when on an as-needed basis to go, I need to check in and just recalibrate. Because if I don't, I know where the cracks start to form. And so whoever you are that's listening, whatever you're going through, we are here for you. There's a lot of bullshit out in the world that you can be attuned to. And the bullshit is the stuff that makes the big headlines that doesn't have a lot backing it. We've all fallen for it. and so, you know, we're here as something of a filter. I think I'm using that term from Lee Peel that she said on my podcast a long time ago. Allow us, the people that have sort of been in the muck, to help you be a filter so that you get as little noise as possible and as much support as possible. And you know, I'll be super, super cliche and say, it's not about being perfect. It's about trying to be better. And I think that's probably the best way I can say it.
That was amazing, man. Thank you for sharing that. That's honestly going to be the mic drop for this podcast. And we're going to definitely leave it there. Jason, my man, thank you so much again for taking the time. I really appreciate you sharing everything you shared. You know, you get vulnerable, and I know it's an easy thing for you to do, but I still appreciate you sharing everything you share with us today. This is the shameless plug time of the podcast of where everyone can find you across the interwebs.
Sure. First off, I want to thank you again for allowing me to be on here. I know you said you haven't had a ton of guests on your show, so I'm very privileged and honored to be one of the few so far. And then if any of the stuff that I found or that I talked about was of interest to your listeners, as long as you can spell my last name, I believe that I am the only Jason Leinart on the planet. So you can find me, the writings and the links to the podcast are at jasonleinarts.com. The podcast is called Revolutionary You. If you would like to read the books, they are available physical and Kindle formats on Amazon. And of course, I'm always happy to take on new Facebook friends so you can see all the mischief that my clients kick up here at RevFit and on Instagram as well. So I'm pretty easily accessible, but just, you know, happy to connect with anybody. And John, again, just thank you so much for allowing me to share the time.
Thanks again, man. I'll link everything in the show notes so it's easy for people to find you. That's it for this episode. Jason, it's been amazing. Hope you have a great rest of your day, man. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.